97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Hans out today. A little family thing. He'll be back with us tomorrow. Joining us now, the play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke. David Locke's conversation brought to you by the Murdoch Auto Group. David, how are you?
No hands.
I know. We'll get through it together. It'll be all right.
Well, maybe.
Okay, calm down. You don't need to be overly bummed out about it.
makes you feel a little inadequate there.
I was gonna laud all kinds of praise on number 1,000 coming up tonight. Now I don't know if I really want to. 2009 doesn't seem like that long ago, but I guess it's been a minute.
I guess. I don't know why. I mean, it does. One of the kids is off. You've gone through this too, right? When the kid's off to college, you suddenly realize what you've been doing for a while. If the kid's life has mostly had you involved in it, so I think the kids are the ones that set the time, show the time. But yeah, 1,000 games feels like a lot to me. And I'm not, you know, I joked with someone today, I'm not a round number guy because I think all of Russell Westbrook's triple doubles are overrated. So I'm not usually one who's kind of into that, but I certainly during the offseason checked it. It actually started, I can't remember what it was, but March 11th, 2010, which is the day in which Rudy tested positive, was like it was actually a milestone for Boone of his total games. And I can't remember exactly what it was. And so I actually built, and then it never happened. And so I actually built during, you know, I think when we were all sitting around sometime trying to figure out where everyone was on games. And bowlers hard to figure out because they get preempted every now and then. So you actually have to go back and try to figure out how many national TV games there were. And Boone didn't work every game in his opening year. So you kind of have to estimate a little bit. And so we all did it. So that's kind of, I knew that 1,000 was coming and then checked it and there it was.
Did you work in maybe a couple of those early games, you know, those Toronto trips, filling in for Hots?
I counted the one Toronto trip I did for Hot Rod. That I think that was March 8, 2009 was the first time I ever called a game for the Jazz. And then part two of that would be I've missed three. So I missed two for my son's. He competed in the national championship for alpine ski racing twice. So I went to that or junior national championship. And then I had the flu once. Donovan's 45 point explosion against New Orleans, his coming out party, I actually didn't call.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the flu game.
Yeah. So Klauke called that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and that's the thing where, you know, it's funny that you went back and checked because, you know, you start to think and you know, it seems like Hots, he called, I think it was his 3,000th game, and the Jazz made a big deal out of it, and it was awesome. And I went up afterwards to congratulate him, and he had that old scorecards that he used to have, and he took it and he threw it on top of the trash, and I grabbed it and I saved it. I still have Hots. Hot scorecard from his 3,000th game somewhere in the house.
Oh, that's cool. That's super cool.
They played New Orleans. It was a Chris Paul, Darren Williams game.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. You should send me a picture of that. That'd be super cool to see. Wow, that's wild. I'll have no scorecard version of that, I don't think, for you tonight. Not that you'd want it. I guess I could, you know, I print out a few notes. My computerized documents get printed out, so I guess that's the modern version of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, and I've gone through written. I've gone now. I do everything online and then do printouts and stuff like that. I'm always changing up how I do my stuff. But it's always kind of interesting to get kind of behind the scenes on how you do things. I mean, come on, you got to celebrate this thing a little bit. That's a monumental number, 1,000 games. All right. So Sunday out of Gaines, right up there. I mean, you know, what are the games that you really look at in this 1,000 game stretch that jump out at you?
So, first game back from the bubble, even though we weren't there, just was a super emotional night, right? We all called a sporting event a game. Kobe, final night.
Oh, yeah.
The early on in my career, as the Jazz, there was a Sonic Jazz game that kind of resonated because I'd done the Sonics, and Ray had a pretty good game for the Sonics. or no, I think that was when the Sonics were kind of back. Maybe that's not right. Maybe I have that reversed. I think it's actually Sonics against Jazz. So I think I have that one reversed. Sundiata Gaines, certainly. And then beating Oklahoma City in the playoffs is right up there on top. That game six at Vivint Arena would have to be on top. And then the other one, by the way, is a Sacramento King game that nobody would ever think anything of, but Hot Rod joined me in the booth.
Oh, I remember that.
And so Hot Rod called the Jazz and I called the Kings for a period of time together. That was pretty wild.
I forgot all about that game. That right. was cool.
And then there's all the little things like my dad doing stats for me in Golden State, my daughter doing stats for me just recently, my closest friends in the Bay Area who I grew up with, you know, calling games together, playing wiffle ball or Nerf basketball or all those, you know, we used to do Pac-10 highlight show, diving into his pool, you know, as the, you know, in the summer. So all those kind of things that we used to do. And then he's worked games with me before. So I think those are the things, those personal notes are ones that you remember as much as anything. I do, you know, Kobe's last game is certainly one you remember. And then just, I would also say just the people, you know, whether it's the emergence of Gordon into a star and watching him develop, watching Donovan become a star, watching Rudy become a star, watching Quinn coach, those things have all been there. And certainly working with Jerry, who, you know, I was terrified of when it first started. So, you know, to work with Jerry was, you know, quite an honor as well. So when you run it back, I mean, it started with Jerry, and then now we have, you know, my first game, I think the starting lineup was what you would probably expect. It was Darren, C.J. Miles. The Toronto game was Darren, C.J. Miles, Ronnie Burke, Paul Millsap, and Mehmet. The first one in Denver, which is 2009, was Darren, Brewer, A.K., Boozer, and Okor. So, you know, there's three versions of the Jazz that I've been fortunate enough to call, and there's been, and then doing three halftime and postgame, I got to do the big dogs that carried us to the finals twice.
How cool was it? And I know this doesn't get counted, but I got to think that night when Hot Rod called his last game in Los Angeles and you were sitting next to him doing pre-half and post, that had to be right up there too in terms of memorable moments.
Yeah, that was. And Kobe coming over to acknowledge him is kind of this really memorable moment in that, you know, any of the interactions with Hot Rod, because that was my idol growing up. I mean, that's the one who I literally said to my dad, like, I don't want to be him. That's the guy I want to be. So, I mean, even from the very beginning when I came and started doing pre-halftime and post-game in 95, is that right? Oh, my gosh.
You're on your own on that one.
Scotty, I know. I think it's 95 was when I started doing pre-halftime and post-game for the Jazz. And so you're just working near Hot Rod. I think I was scared to talk to him, though. Like, I'm not really convinced that I, like, really talked to Hot Rod for about the first year. I think I was so in awe every time I saw him. I was like, I don't want to bother him. I'll just stay over here.
Well,
I talked to Boone. That was my way of, like, being near Hot Rod.
Well, I've got my own Hot Rod story in terms of I was doing courtside and I was doing the walk-off interview, and Hot Rod and I, we were friendly. I mean, we talked every now and then. But I'd never worked with him before. And I realize as he's about ready to throw down to me, I'm like, I bet Hotz doesn't even know my name. And sure enough, when he threw down, he had no idea what my name was. Like, Scott, Lagarde. I'm like, yeah, all right, come on. It's cool. Great. Don't worry.
I'm kind of exaggerating on the Hot Rod thing, because the fact is that we used to go to Hot Rod's every night, right? Like, he had his bar. And after a lot of games, we would go to Hot Rod, or just a lot of nights. I mean, I was 24, 25 years old. So, you know, we spent a lot of nights at Hot Rod's in that stretch. So you actually, you know, he was pretty I don't want to make it sound like he wasn't personable and he wasn't friendly. He certainly was. I was just in awe. So I probably did talk to him sometime in that first year, because we actually were out a lot at night all as a group together.
All right. So let's talk about this team and where they're at and how difficult this situation is. There's a contingency out there that would say, blow this thing up, it's a mess. There's others that say, hey, it's going to be fine, just ride it through, and this team will find a way to get back to where they were. Where are you at on that spectrum?
certainly not blow it up. I mean, you know, like, are we going to blow up the Warriors? Because what are the Warriors too lose? Like 7 of their last 10 or something like that?
Yeah.
Are we blowing them up? Like, probably should trade Klay Thompson.
Yeah, get rid of him.
Right? I mean, you know, and Draymond's been missing a bunch of games, so let's just ignore that as being a part of the storyline. Well, Rudy missed a bunch of games. You know, I do believe Denver and Laker games fall kind of into scripts. Well, first of all, one thing I think that we just cannot underestimate in this league this year is rest advantage. So I think 65% of teams with rest advantage are winning games right now, regardless of, like, favorite or not, or any, 65%. That's a, like, Scotty, I don't know if you've ever placed a bet before in your life on anything.
Never. No.
But if you knew that something was 65% as somebody who maybe was to place a wage on something, would that matter to you?
That would matter a great deal, yes.
Yes, so teams with a rest advantage are winning 65% of games. My theory on this, of why this is such a big number this year, because it's much higher than usual, is that the margin from the best to the, ignore maybe the three or four teams that aren't trying, so the margin from number 1 to 25 is so slim in the league that when you start changing an injury here or there or a motivation here or there or a rest here or there, you really begin to swing games in a way that has not been usual. So you take Denver coming off a 30-whatever point win, Jazz having lost four games in a row, having 2 days rest, 3 days rest, suddenly healthy. It, like, that script was there for the Jazz to take that. The next night, the script was the exact opposite. Frank Vogel's on the verge of being fired. LeBron's apologizing with a tweet. They have a rest advantage. We're on a back end of a back-to-back. And they've been humiliated in their last outing out in the 31-point loss to Denver. Like, I kind of think there's a little bit of that going on. Now, the one play they kept getting us on in the middle of the floor with LeBron setting the pick and Stanley Johnson coming around, like, that's a little unnerving because that felt a little bit to me like the next variation of how teams are going to exploit us defensively, right? Like, game 9 or 10 last year, Marcus Morris Sr. sat in the corner against the Clippers and they went 5 out and you were like, oh, that's a real problem. Like, we don't have an answer for that. And sure enough, the playoffs game, and we didn't have an answer for that. And I'm a little nervous that we just actually saw the new variation. Now, Maybe it's just LeBron's that special, but that's my little concern. There's just been enough. People know us really well. We're really well scouted. We've been analyzed by everyone. We've won more games than any team in the NBA other than Milwaukee since 2016. Like, there's just no mystery, and everyone's prepared for us, and that's really evident to me right now.
Well, and I think that's, if there's anything that's the cause for concern, I think that you just hit on it there. Is it indicative of a fatal flaw or a significant issue that has been exposed? And this team, I mean, this league is so good in this scouting. And when somebody finds something and there's a blueprint, it gets replicated in a big way. And if you don't adjust to that adjustment, then you're dead in the water. And so I guess the question is are the Jazz prepared to make sure that, or do they have the capability within this roster to adjust to that and get themselves in a spot where they can avoid with what we saw in the playoffs against the Clippers?
Because what that adjustment is the Jazz have done a really masterful job this year of keeping Rudy around the rim.
Yeah.
So the Jazz adjusted to what everyone else was doing, which was spreading the Jazz out and then pulling Rudy out of the middle. And if you look at this year, the Jazz have done a pretty marvelous job. Quinn and his staff made some changes. And so Rudy stayed around the middle. Rudy's defending as many shots from 6 feet out as ever before. He's defending more shots every game. He's having an impact. And this was, okay, well, if you're going to keep Rudy in the middle of the lane, then we're setting a pick on him at the 10-foot mark. And then when that pick is set, you then have to either switch or your other guard has to defend whoever has the ball. Now, it has to have a five who can handle, who can make that play. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, of all things, it was Stanley Johnson. And it was LeBron setting the pick so that suddenly if Jordan Clarkson switched onto LeBron, you had a problem there. So there is a uniqueness to LeBron being the second big that was doing that. But it's worth keeping an eye on to see whether that's a trend we see moving forward.
I know that you were covering the team back in the 90s when this would pop up from time to time, and I made this analogy. Like, it seemed like every summer, if you're a Jazz fan, there would always be Karl Malone, Larry H. Miller dust up, and then everybody would kiss and make up, and everything would be fine. Rudy's pretty blunt, and he's got things to say, and he'll say it. Do you ever worry about those comments ever, causing issues inside a locker room?
Yes. How's
Yep.
that?
All right, fair enough.
Like, I mean, you gotta be. Like, well, not, I mean, I was, yeah. You know, might have been right. I don't know if that's the right approach. I don't know, right? You know, I was with it, and I'm not sure this is a great answer, but I was in the, when I was the Seattle Storm play-by-play announcer, and the great late Ann Donovan was the head coach, and we lost in Connecticut, and Lauren Jackson and Sue Bird were super young. We had a young team, and Ann came out and became a sailor for a few minutes and was with me and just went on this tirade. We're never winning beep until one of these women is willing to walk onto the bus and have every single person beep and hate them and beep and this. And it was great. It was epic. I'll never forget it. And the concept was you got to have someone on your roster who's willing to walk on the team bus and have everyone be mad at them because they just told the truth. And that's how you win a championship. I don't know if that's actually universally true, but that was her point of view in that moment in time. And I don't know. And in the Storm case, they did win a championship one day. And I do think Lauren Jackson, who was the center, became a little bit of that one who was willing to be like, you know what? Screw you all. Like, and so, you know, maybe you have to have it a little bit, but I'm not sure it's a great script. But well, you know, this is, they're in a delicate dance. There have never been two young players growing up together in the league that have been able to maintain a relationship and stay together. Like Rudy and Donovan have actually done it longer than most, if you look around the league, right? Ben and Joel are done, clearly, right? Penny and Shaq didn't make it. Kobe and Shaq didn't make it. LaMarcus and Damian didn't make it. Like this is kind of, this is, it is almost, it's why I actually think the way Oklahoma City and the way Houston and some of these teams are trying to build their teams is totally flawed, because trying to have these two young kids, frankly, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant didn't make it.
Yep.
Right? Like that's a no-brainer. Like you don't make that trade, except for maybe somebody wanted that trade. Frankly, Kevin Durant and Steph Curry had a hard time with the concept when they were together, and they didn't grow up together. Like the one that might be different is Steph and Draymond somehow, and Steph and Klay. Like this is probably because Steph's so special. But frankly, Durant didn't, you know, they didn't do it. So if you look around the league, when two young players are rising to the top together, it doesn't hold very often, and it never has. It's not, this is not like, you know, oh, the old days, screw you and the old
No,
days,
no.
right? Like, you know, Matt, it was Kareem's team and Magic joined in, right? Like,
Yeah.
so that worked, right? You know, so yeah. Hey, and it also with no free agency, it works better when guys actually don't have a choice and they can't leave. Then they, so I think that you have to, you know, it's a delicate dance on every roster at every moment, at every time when players are rising to the top together, because it's not a kumbaya trip to the top.
Go, for all you kids out there, go Google Jason Kidd, Jimmy
Oh yeah.
Jackson, and Jamal Mashburn, and Tony Braxton. And
Right, adding Tony Braxton, the fourth player on that roster.
you'll see how that turns out real quick. That's not a
But
new
that was
school
like a
thing.
dream team, right? Jason Kidd,
Yeah.
Jimmy Jackson. I mean, you just go through the history of the league, Penn, you know, just it's endless. That's the truth. It's not that different than actually anywhere else, by the way. Like,
By the way,
I'm guessing two rising salespeople in the same office,
oh yeah.
and they suddenly start divvying out accounts. I'm guessing that's not a total kumbaya either.
I mean, you should see the clashes me and Hans have all the time. It's crazy. It's ugly.
I could tell some stories about this one, do old David Locke stories about rising people wanting afternoon drive shifts, right?
Yep, I'm sure you could.
Right. Including myself.
Hey, by the way, you'll like this. So Utah State played New Mexico last week, and Jamal Mashburn's kid is on that team, and
Oh, that's cool.
Eddie House's kid is on that team.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Oh, that's
and
cool. Who's their head coach?
it is Richard Pitino, Rick Pitino's son.
Oh, super interesting, because Mash played for
Yeah.
Kentucky, and did he play for Rick?
He did play for Rick, and he was
Yeah.
with him in Minnesota. And when Pitino got fired in Minnesota, he came with him out to New Mexico. And by the way, that team's a mess. They're not. I mean, those two are really, really good. They don't have anybody else on that roster, and they're not
Do
particularly good
either
team.
of those teams make the players make the league?
I don't think Eddie House's kid does. The Mashburn kid might have an opportunity. I mean, he's got some shooting ability. The funny thing is Eddie House's kid, Jay, or I think it's Jalen House. He actually averages like 7 assists a game, which I'm thinking, I don't know if
Whoa.
Eddie House had 7 assists in his entire NBA career.
No, Eddie House was, you know what Eddie House has claimed to fame locally is, right?
Clarkson.
No, he was the perfect player comp to Jimmer Fredette.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And people lost their mind when we made that
He
comparison.
was the perfect player comp to Jimmer
Yeah.
Fredette, like 100%. You know, here's an interesting like socioeconomic discussion on this. I'll be curious to watch. So we have so many kids in the league. It's so hard to make the league, first of all, so hard to make the league. And we have so many kids in the league whose parents were pros. So from Donovan Mitchell's dad being a minor league baseball player to, you know, Steph and Klay, and there's just a lot, right? Like, you know, and it's also players like you've never realized, like Ed Davis's dad played in the league, right? Terry Davis. Like, there's just a ton of now the next generation of kids. Dads are going to have made so much money. I wonder whether it continues or not. Right? Like Steph Curry did okay, but he didn't make $125 million, and Steph grew up, you know, perfectly well off, but he didn't grow up like lavishly rich, like $100 million rich. And it's interesting to me to see whether the next set of kids who are growing up with $100 million are able to have the work ethic and dedication to be able to go there.
Well, and then also too, to have that edge that you get. I mean, I was watching a documentary a few years ago about Barry Sanders, and his son was, didn't he play at Stanford, Barry Sanders' kid? And Barry Sanders in this documentary said, "My son has far more talent than I had at his age, but he will never be the player that I was because I refuse to be the dad that my dad was to me." And
You know,
because
there's the LeBron, the variation a little bit on LeBron would be when LeBron was asked about Bronny, why doesn't play football? And his answer was because he doesn't need to.
Oh, wow.
I only played football. LeBron said, I only played football because I was trying to get out. And I didn't know what my path out was. But my son doesn't need to play football. He doesn't need to get hit in the head.
Yeah. And that's just an edge that I don't think your random, person or, somebody, living in the suburbs here in Utah can really appreciate that statement.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's very true. I mean, some of these guys certainly have just an edge. You know, Steph is just a killer, right? Steph's just a killer. Like the quiet baby assassin is his nickname, and that it's true. Because and so you wonder, regardless, would Steph just be Steph? But you know, hey, it's not just athletes, right? One of
Oh,
my
yeah.
friends is the financial advisor for the richest of the rich. And he just says these kids, you know, the kids are, it's a problem. Like having that much money is a problem for the kids growing up. And, you know, if we go back to where we started the conversation, he always says to me, I mean, referenced me, he's like, if you'd had that money, you wouldn't be the Jazz play-by-play announcer. And I'm like, come on, this is always what I want to do. When I was 8, 9, 10, 12 years old, I said that's when he's like, right. But there was a moment in time where desperation hits you and you just powered through it. And if you had that kind of wealth, you just wouldn't have. You just, I'm like, yeah, okay, well, I don't need to, you know, I mean, my career starts because I'm teaching skiing at Solitude. And I finish, anytime I don't get an afternoon lesson, I drive down to 106.5 in the Walker Center, take like my ski instructor money from the day, pay for parking, and go sit in the lobby of the radio station until they finally hired me. I literally just sat there every day, like, hi, I'm here again. I'm just going to be here again tomorrow, by the way, because I just want a job.
I
Right? And
can,
so, like, on
yeah.
one level, I was really fortunate that I had enough financial wherewithal that I could survive as a ski instructor while doing that. So I don't want to, you know, I've always said my life is a combination of privilege and perseverance. And I don't ever want to diminish how much the privilege mattered in this story. But there is something to that, right? Like, if I had like the financial wherewithal to be able to like survive while teaching skiing and barely have enough money and you know, wasn't necessarily having leftover cup of ramen every single day, only most of the days. And, you know, I think had, you know, my family had 100 million, maybe I don't do that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think there's something, it's not just athletes, I think it's everyone.
Well, I mean, I think your ability to know that there's a safety net allows you to act differently than you would otherwise. And if you don't have that safety net and that this is all you got, then you got to go. And so,
yeah, that's not a safety. There's a difference between, like I would argue in my privilege, I had a safety net, but I knew I had to work every day. So I better make sure I could get the job I want. Right.
Yeah.
But we're talking 100 million. That's a little different than a safety net.
Yeah.
It's
David,
like a bouncy. That's like a bouncy house following you everywhere.
It's like, oh, I failed. All right. Well, that was fun.
Woo! I get to go down a slide. Woohoo!
Hey, by the way, and I know I got to let you go, but Lloyd, I hope you're okay with this, but Lloyd did send me a picture. He did see the van in action, and he did send me a picture of it, and it is.
He did.
It is everything that I thought it would be.
When
it's
did
impressive.
Lloyd see the van?
Lloyd, you want to pipe in on this?
I think it was like last. It was a game last week. I think is when it was.
Oh, yeah, the game. The van. Was
I think
the
you
game.
Were parked there doing actually an interview. I think you were getting ready to hop on air.
Oh, I was doing. Well, I do. I've been bringing the van down and doing the Zoom because you can't do the Zoom from inside the arena because you can't hear. Since we're not meeting coaches in person, you're doing all the Zooms. I've been doing.
In fact,
the Zoom.
I think it was last Wednesday.
Yeah, and I probably was doing a Zoom in the van.
And that thing is a thing of beauty.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, it's fun.
Good for you. All right, David, appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
We can go hang out. You know, we can go chill. We can't do stuff. Like, I'll bring lunch someday, and we'll have lunch in the van.
Well, hey, we'll bring the Comrex down there. We'll do the show from the van.
We can do that. That's easy.
Yeah, I like it.
All right.
Thanks, David.
Remote. See you. Bye.
All right. David Locke, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network as we are out and about today here at TriDayTrading.com. Again, TriDayTrading.com. And look, I'm a huge fan of what they're doing down here. So many people are supplementing their income. A good chunk of people are replacing their income. You can do it as well. All you have to do is check out that free webinar. Go to TriDayTrading.com right now. Check out the webinar. And you can find out if this works for you. 30 days. You give them $10. That $10, by the way, is going to go to charity. And then you have 30 days to figure out if this is right for you. And you're going to get great one-on-one training the entire time. It's not a huge class with 40 people. It is personalized training specifically for you. You can go at the pace you want. If you feel like, hey, you know, I need to circle back and work on this a little bit more, they give you a dummy account. And you can trade with that dummy account and really find out what works best for you. Again, all you have to do is go to TriDayTrading.com right now. Again, TriDayTrading.com and sign up for that webinar. Check it out. If it's something that interests you, then do the 10-day trial. And you'll find out pretty quick in those in that 30-day free trial or a 10-day trial if it's right for you. But I highly suggest you go the 30 days, get that personalized one-on-one training. Find out if it's right for you, and then if you want to proceed, then that's great. It's all right here at TriDayTrading.com. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
The new Zone lineup is here. Give it up, give it up. With the best coverage of the sports you love and the teams you can't live without. Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 to 10, followed by Jake Scott and Ben Anderson from 10 to noon. Get your daily fix of Hans and Scotty from noon to 3. And then The Zone welcomes Unrivaled with Alex Keery and former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell to the team. Weekdays from 3 to 6, live and local. All day, every day. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Hans and Scotty. Hans out today. He'll be back with us coming up tomorrow. But we got the good, the bad, the ugly. Good, bad, ugly, brought to you by Zero Res. Get those carpets cleaned. Hey, at the van outside in the old cul-de-sac today, one of my neighbors heard how great Zero Res was and said, you know what? Let's bring him over here. Let's get it done. Go to ZeroResSaltLake.com if you're up north, ZeroResDavisWeber.com. Schedule your appointment, or you just give them a call right now, 801-288-9376. That's 801-288-9376. Hey, Lloyd, we got to talk about this a little bit. before we get to the good, now you need to tone it down a little bit on Twitter. Because
what are we talking about here?
Because you can't be making referee jokes on Twitter. Like last night before the game, I look and you're like retweeting a picture of one of the officials from the Raiders Bengals game, all dressed up in Bengal stripes. You can't be promoting all that stuff.
Why not? It was a funny tweet. I was doing the crying laughing emoji or whatever.
Essentially, what you're saying is that the refs cost you a game.
Didn't say that at all. It was just a funny tweet.
That's what you're implying.
No, it's just a really funny tweet. Made me laugh.
Yeah.
It was good. Can't tell me there's not. You cannot tell me with a straight face that there is not this NFL against the Raiders, officiating against the Raiders whole thing. Like it's just too, I actually reread this, this article that I read a couple, it was from a couple of years ago. Cause they did a whole, went over all the stats from the 2019 season of penalties that went against the Raiders. And it was actually, it was fascinating.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just a coincidence, dude. Like it's not, I know they've become this team that's, oh, they're just undisciplined. That's not it at all. In fact, it went through all the type of penalties that happen when teams are, you know, undisciplined and not well coached and whatever. And the Raiders were actually not that bad in those areas. Like it's a thing, Scotty. It really is.
It's the world.
Suddenly,
is
that- the Raiders went from a team that was like one of the best teams in the league, the 70s through like the mid 80s. They were like a really good team.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's just boom, gone. Following Al Davis suing the NFL, it's just suddenly they just lost it.
So what you're saying is the NFL has been out to get the Raiders.
Absolutely. But hey, Al Davis maybe shouldn't have sued the NFL. I guess. Maybe it's on him. I don't know.
But if Al Davis came out and said the world was flat, we'd be like, yep. I mean, come on. Stop it.
I'm not going to stop
don't
it.
Don't go conspiracy theory.
I am going to go conspiracy theory. It's legit. Dude, you saw that Chargers game? That Chargers game where they had, especially on that last drive, where there was that face mask in overtime that should have been called, and it was so blatant. You can't miss those
stop
things.
It.
I'm not going to stop it, Scotty. I won't be silenced.
Don't be that guy.
I will not be silenced. Not going to happen.
Well, it might be a little hypocritical because between the two of us, only one of us has actually been reprimanded by a conference on things said about officials. So,
yeah. Anyway. That is true, Scotty. That's
a story I'll tell you during the break.
Wait. Oh, is this something new? Wait, hold on. No, because I thought you had already been. Did you get reprimanded again?
No, I did not get reprimanded.
Somebody we know get reprimanded?
No, somebody on this show, not named you, may have gotten a terse phone call about some things that he may have said.
Okay, all right. I'm going to send you this article. You should read.
No,
this
I'm
article.
Not. I'm not going to read that nonsense.
Read it, Scotty.
All right. Hey, read by the it. Way. Speaking of controversy and conspiracy, you know what you were doing 20 years ago today, right?
I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it because I saw all the videos today and it just made me even more furious.
20 years ago today, and this is our good. It's the good, the bad, the ugly.
You are the worst. You're a bad human being, Scotty.
No, I'm
yes,
not.
Yes, you are.
I'm
That's
just saying.
So
20 years ago
today.
We don't
even have time. It's 1:48. You've made us late all day long.
The tuck rule in the snow. Letter of the law. Officials made the right call.
Don't even say letter of the law.
It was letter of the law.
It was not.
It was. Made a forward pass motion, bringing the ball back in. It's still considered a incomplete pass. Was it Ty Law with the corner blitz?
No, it was Charles Woodson.
Oh, Charles Woodson. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, shoot. So Woodson comes on the corner blitz. Looks like Tom Brady's going to get a fumble. Looks like it's the Raiders' ball. But again, according to the letter of the law at the time, it was an incomplete pass. Raiders go down, kick the field goal to send it into OT?
You want to talk about that letter of the law? There was a game between the Patriots and the Jets, And I want to say Vinny Testaverde might have been the quarterback at the time. That same year, they had the same exact thing happened, and they didn't call it, or they called it a fumble.
Well, that's probably an officiating crew that didn't know the letter of the law.
Yeah,
and that's why they weren't. Amazing. That's why they weren't officiating in the playoffs.
It's amazing how that works.
You really, truly believe that the NFL's been out to get the Raiders?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
For 30 years now.
It's not a coincidence. Like, the stats, it's not a coincidence. It's not. I don't care what you say. And it's fine. This will be my cross to bear. Like, it's my team. I'm not going to drop them.
The Raiders
will literally have to be so dang good at in offense and defense. They will have to be dang near unstoppable to be able to overcome it.
You're more emotionally attached to this than you are Barry Bonds never taking an illegal substance in his entire life.
And that's a fact, too, by the way. He never did.
Stop it.
Hey, don't give me this stuff about, oh, well, why is his head so big? Because guess what? I try to put on a hat that I had from, like, in my early 20s, and my head won't even fit in there either. It happens. Your head grows
as you get older.
Okay,
it doesn't triple in size. You're not all of a sudden wake up and you're Caillou. I mean, calm down over there.
I'm so upset with you right now. You just set me off at a tirade, and I'm very angry.
What hill are you willing to die on more? The Raiders are the NFL's been out to get the Raiders for the last four decades, or that Barry Bonds lived a clean life with no illegal substances and not enough steroids to kill an actual horse coursing through his body.
I will equally die on both of those.
Oh, my goodness.
So just deal with it. But the Raiders one, actually, there's a lot more evidence that is in favor of the Raiders on that one.
Oh, well, I mean, there's a little bit of evidence on Barry Bonds, the fact that there's an actual book written about the clear and the cream.
Oh, and all books are just truth, fact. All books are just facts. Yep. Sure. Okay. Not just trying to make money at all.
I just want to know what's going on in, like, the league office where Roger Goodell gets in front of all the officials and says, "All right, guys, you know what you have to do. Screw the Raiders.
When there's a player that's going to be retired, that guy's going to go a ways in the playoffs.
Well, obviously that's wrong. Or Ben Roethlisberger would have
not as good of a story.
The Patriots,
though.
Or excuse
and
me,
plus,
the
Ben Roethlisberger gave them a black eye with that whole.
okay. Yeah. All right.
Legal
issues. Yeah.
So, I think it depends on the player. Hey, you're the one that's brought that up.
Well, I was proven wrong.
You know there's conspiracies.
And I'm willing to admit that you know what? I thought that was the case,
okay,
but
you can
obviously
no longer
that's
bring
not
that type
the case.
Of a point up ever again. And if
well,
you do,
sometimes,
I'm going to slam you for it.
That's, you know what? Sometimes you throw things out there and then you realize, oh, I'm wrong,
that's not
and
the first
I
time
was
you
wrong.
Brought it up either.
And so I admit that that was a wrong thing
We're
to
late.
Say. It was stupid.
Go to break.
And I will own it. See, you just need to own the fact that the Roger Goodell's not having some super secret meeting. It's like, okay,
BS.
Guys, how
you
are we going to screw the Raiders this year?
You know it. It's a fact.
It's not
It's science.
It's not science. You calm down back there. My goodness. Throwing out stuff like that. You're like the Kyrie Irving of Utah sports radio all of a sudden.
I'm telling you. I can't wait till you read this article.
I will not be reading any of this.
You should. Do yourself a favor.
Probably by, like,
educate yourself a little bit on it.
It's posted by RaidersForLife.com. All right. Hans and Scotty coming up next. Whole World News straight ahead right here on the Zone Sports Network.
This is Unripe.
Guys are doing a hell of a job.
Here's what is great about what George Kliavkov said. I love the brutal honesty. I mean, if you can't look at a situation and assess it and call it what it is and say what it is, you're never going to improve. If you're constantly putting a Band-Aid on it and say, no, we're in a good spot. We'll just, you know, just give us another year. Just give us, you know, it's a building year, you know, but man, next year things are going to be good. Next year never comes around. And when you can come out and make a very clear, very bold, very accurate, and very honest statement, that's really kind of the first step to, like, making change.
That is unbelievable.
Catch Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Weekdays from 3 to 7 on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
We've got the whole world in our hands.
You got the whole world in our hands. We
On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Whole World News brought to you by My Hearing Centers. They change lives through better hearing. All right, we're up against it. We got a lot to get to, plus Jeremiah Jensen is joining us in our next segment. So Whole World News will be, well, a chance for you to win tickets. It's a Win Ticket Wednesday right now here on The Zone Sports Network.
This is your chance to win tickets.
Win.
It's a Win Ticket Wednesday. Caller number 12 right now at 855-340-ZONE. Woo! And you'll win tickets right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
If you want to win tickets, 855-340-ZONE, that's the number to call. We are giving away a pair of tickets to go see the Grizzlies in action, ready to see a little hockey. Well, now's the time to call, 855-340-ZONE. That's 855-340-ZONE. And you, my friend, are going to be going and seeing the Grizzlies in action. All right, we're live here at Tri-Day Trading. Justin's hanging out with us right now on the line. Justin, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I always love coming down here, man, because it's always fun hearing stories of people where their lives have changed, where people have supplemented their income, in some cases even replaced their income. Kind of give me your background and your story with TriDayTrading.com.
Oh, man. So the funny thing is I actually heard about it first on 1280 The Zone.
Yeah.
So it was your guys's segments that got me and my friend interested. And he pulled the trigger a lot sooner than I did. But he, the funny thing is he got started, first did the $10 Trader Lite program and decided it was the right thing for him, and then moved on to coaching. And funny thing is he quit his job, and I didn't see much of him. And then he posted on Facebook, you know, a few months later, like a year later, actually. And I was like, oh, he's living in Florida. And he posted that he just, you know, is debt-free and is loving life. And I attended a webinar just a few months ago, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to do it. So I paid the $10 and started the Trader Lite program, and I just completed it like 30 days ago. And I'm 30 days into my new coaching. So
wow. So so give us what it's like now that you have a funded account, and you know, kind of give us, you know, what an average day is like for you and how things are going.
So I am not normally an early riser. I am, yeah. Like I miss the DJ and PK show every morning. I never get to listen to it. But the funny thing is since I started Tri-Day Trading, it's always playing on in the background. So I love that. But with now, I just wake up at 6 a.m. and, you know, start a pot of water and make tea. And then I go down to my computer and I start looking at the things that they give you online. Tri-Day Trading gives you a lot of different what are they called? they give you indicators. The indicators that you can look at. And I just start looking at those, and then I pull up the trading platform, the Metaphor, and I kind of go from there and just begin trading. And sometimes I'm only working, you're only doing it for an hour, sometimes at the max 2 hours. But I would say for the most part, to get in and out of a trade, you're in 3 or 4 minutes. As long as you follow the indicators and the rules that Tri-Day Trading gives you, you're pretty positive moving through.
So you're fired up, man. You feel like this is going to lead to some really great things for you.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I'm pretty pumped. I think at the least supplement my income some, maybe able to take the family on a vacation or two, and then I'm excited.
I love it, man. Those are great stories. And here's the thing, Justin, did you have any prior experience in the markets or anything like that?
None at all. Like I joined the Trader Lite, and I told my coach, Zach, when he first came on, when we first met, and I was like, man, you're going to have to, I was like, technology wise with computers, I'm great, but all these lines and the colors, I have no idea what any of it means. And he's like, don't worry. He's like, we'll dumb it down for you. And we went from the beginning, and it was a lot easier than I thought.
Yeah. I was the same way, man. Well, it's so good to hear, Justin. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the station, and good luck. Let us know how your story goes.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
You got it. That's Justin. And again, he's been doing this for, he got into the program, took the 30 days. Now is about 30 days into it and just a couple hours a day. And dude's already starting to make some money. I mean, it's awesome. Love those stories. Go to TriDayTrading.com. Take that free webinar at TriDayTrading.com. Hands and Scotty coming up next. Jeremiah Jensen joins us straight ahead right here on the Zone Sports Network.